Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 16, delivered on October 18, 2018. The title of this lecture is Bonds.
Today, bonds. And to begin this lecture, we will, as we have in many times before this, have a quick look at the yield curve. Look at the numbers on the Treasury yields, because those represent debt instruments of various kinds. And getting to the current month, we can see that the yield curve spread, the yield spread on the 7-10, has actually opened back up to 6 basis points. But as a percentage of spread, it is slowly decreasing. But as all interest rates rise, that's not a good thing anyway. And we'll take a quick here at a dynamic yield curve so you can see the extent of what's going on. And after I've gone through bonds, we'll be able to see a little more of that. Stockcharts.com. And waiting for it. Okay, quit it. There. Now, as you can see, it has been a very serious upstroke in the bond yields. and that's bad news. All of the yields, you see all those yields rising? That's the bad news, because that is the business suppression that is going to go on. As interest rates go up, the spending by consumers, the spending by businesses goes down because there's simply the cost of capital has gone up. And that's going to cause the economy to slide into a recession. So there's very little question that we're going to have a recession. How severe it is the question, and when it will technically begin is the second question. A recession technically is 2 consecutive quarters of negative growth of GDP. A recession technically is 2 consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. So in other words, what we're talking about here is an economy that is sliding toward weakening growth of the gross domestic product, but we're not seeing it negative yet. And for it to be a technical recession, it has to be 2 consecutive quarters of that. So in other words, 6 consecutive months of negative GDP growth. How soon is it going to happen? Again, probably around May. Probably. May or June. Yeah. Let me clarify the question. Are you asking what would be an interest rate that would be a bad interest rate?
Yeah, I'm just saying
how high does it have to be before we really get sweaty about it? That's actually a good question. Yeah. I'm going to do something here. Bear with me 1 second. I'm going to go back to this yield curve. Look at a 30-year. Let me do the current month so we don't have massive numbers to look at. Okay. 3.35% is the yield currently on a 30-year treasury, which is sort of like a baseline. And I'm going to talk about that first today in bonds. If I were to see a baseline of probably 3.75 to 4, that would be, there's no way the economy could survive without going into some kind of an economic pause or recession, because that 4% for a treasury would translate into a much higher rate for something like a corporate bond. So if we're talking about a treasury at 4%, that would be the highest quality corporate bonds higher, and then anything that wasn't the highest quality. In other words, what's going to happen is as interest rates go up, the weaker companies, the companies that are more sensitive to interest rates, the parts of the economy that are more sensitive to interest rates will be the first ones to buckle. So in other words, you'll see the economy, the strongest companies will do okay quite a while. But the weaker companies, and there are many of them that are interest rate sensitive, many of them can't take high interest rates. It hurts them when that happens. They would be the first ones to snap under that kind of an interest rate regime. Interestingly, some of these high flyers, companies with high price earnings ratios, companies that are already highly leveraged, companies that rely on short-term borrowing, those are the kinds of companies that are damaged first by high interest rates. So, for example, if you've got, you, sir, own a furniture store. Every year in the late winter, you ask for a line of credit from a bank. I need this money so that I can lay out all this nice furniture for people to buy in my store. And as they buy it, I can pay down what I've borrowed to put this massive inventory on my floor. That's great. Except that as interest rates go up, that makes it more costly for you to put that stuff on your floor. It makes you more desperate to sell it. So you're probably going to have problems because the people who would buy it are probably going to buy it on credit and interest rates are going up, and you're going to be caught between a rock and a hard place. Your borrowing costs to lay out that floor plan are higher, and your customers are going to be less willing to buy from you. And that's going to mean that you have to get more creative. You're going to have, how are you going to deal with it if people have to borrow at very high interest rates to buy your furniture, sir? What are you going to do about that?
Lower the prices.
There you go. Yeah, and you're borrowing at higher rates? Yeah, that's going to work. Mm-hmm. Here's one way you could do it. 0% financing, and then you jack the hell out of the prices up. You see? I lie to them. Oh, it's 0% financing for 24 months. For hell, I'll finance you until the day you die. And then 0%. And then, of course, I will pad the price of it to deal with that problem. That's how you do it. That's how we've always done it. We make the customer feel like, wow, that's a great deal, 0% financing? Well, that's right, I'm just that kind of a great son of a bitch, you know, when you're not. Anyway. I already talked to you about bonds, and we're going to see more about bonds, but take it like this. Okay, I see a coupon rate on a bond. Probably right now for high quality bonds and of longer maturities, you're probably looking at interest rates between 3.5% to 5% for decent quality bonds, maybe a little higher than 5% right now. That'd be the coupon you'd see. Higher coupons means that there's going to would be on lower quality, of course, and all of that. But as interest rates in the economy go up, the bonds have to offer higher interest rates to attract capital to those bonds. Consider this. The United States government is running the most insanely high deficits in its history. It's just borrowing money hand over fist. is borrowing in the capital markets at a frenetic rate. Why? Because of those tax cuts. We just can't stop doing that stupid thing. And so we are now in a position where the United States government is borrowing money at the fastest rate in history. So, in order for it to get the money that it wants, it will pay whatever interest rate it has to get that money. It will offer whatever interest rate is necessary to attract the capital, the global capital. Well, of course, if the government is jacking up interest rates to draw capital, that means that everyone else has, corporations, consumers, banks, all have to offer higher and higher interest rates to compete for that same capital that the government is competing for. An 800-pound gorilla like the United States borrowing at that rate. And, of course, it's going to borrow from the usual sources, from China, from the Arabs, from all these countries that have, that don't do the stupid stuff we do, that live within their means, so that we can live fat on the table. And, of course, then that means that all of those companies that need money, all of the consumers that need money, well, they're just going to have to offer whatever interest rates they have to. So if the government offers, let's say, 4%, then a high-quality bond from a corporation would have to offer 4% plus a little bit more for the credit default premium. That would be for a AAA. For a BBB, it would be considerably even higher than that. So as the government drives interest rates up with its borrowing, that's going to drive all other interest rates up too. Now, as I told you, there are several different kinds of bonds, obviously. There are a bunch of different kinds of bonds. But the term bond is kind of generic. It means any kind of debt paper. But if you want to be technical about it, and some of you will have to be because you're going to be in finance or you're going to be in economics or you're going to be in some other kind of business field where you're going to step into the world of borrowing, you have to be able to break them down a little bit more finely. This is the subject of debt. That's what this is about, debt. Now, debt can come in different flavors. The bill, as I told you before, is less than or equal to a year. So a treasury bill would be something that would be like a 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, or 1 year. You, madam, got a bill in the mail. Well, that was your debt you issued to an electric company, to a cable company, and they're reminding you to pay it within, well, much less than 1 year. You know, I'd kind of push that. See, do you really need a bill or maybe a note or a bond? And they shut off my stuff and I have to pay them. Bastards. Okay, a note is 1 to 7. Now, I've seen the term note even taken out to 15 years. Netflix borrowed a bunch of money. I mean, it was over $1 billion, I think, on 15-year paper. And notice that word paper, that's a kind of like a technical term, loose technical term. It borrowed more than, I think it was $1.1 billion on 15-year paper. And I've seen that the term used by finance people, that was though they issued 15-year notes. So, I mean, there's kind of a fluidity in there. But a bond is definitely a long haul. 20, 30 year. You, madam, you borrowed from a bank to buy yourself a wonderful double-wide house trailer on the south side of Bloomington. I know, right? It's good times. And that 30-year paper is a bond. You issued. I'm the bank. I lent you the money. So I am your investor. I'm the investor in you. This is a collateralized bond. It's a collateralized debt because you are backing your promissory agreement, your promissory note or promissory contract with an actual asset that I can take if you don't pay me. So it's got that mortgage feature. A mortgage is actually an attachment. Damn. You know, the death angel follows me. When I turn around, there's someone standing there. I think, you know, not yet. I'm teaching. Weirdo. Guess that tells me how these girls feel when I walk behind them at the mall. I didn't say that. Where the hell was I? Okay. Yeah, and as I said, this term bond is generic. I mean, we'll say, well, this is a bond, but it's actually not. Now, there are two flavors of bonds. In the business and corporate world, there's discount paper. You borrow a certain amount, but you pay a higher amount when it's due. And there's no interest payments along the way. So, for example, if I were to borrow, let's say on some commercial paper. On commercial paper, which is 30-day, very high-quality debt, I issue commercial paper at 982,000 dollars. Well, that would be pretty high. Let's try 992,000. And in 30 days, I owe $1 million back to the investor, the lender, the buyer of the paper. That's a discount instrument. It's just simply there's a discount and I pay a higher amount. That's called par. The $1 million is par. Face value, face par. They represent what is actually owed at the end. And in this case, then, I am owing is $8,000. Yeah. On an investment of 992, what I am getting is $8,000 on an investment of 992. That would be my yield. But that would be a 30-day yield. So what I would have to do is to get the annualized yield. I would have to say $1 million over 992 to the 365 over 30, 365.25 over 30. Minus one. Is that right? No. Is that right? Let me work it out here. And actually, I should have you, I'm going to extend this lecture so that you can have the TI with you clear. Okay. 1 million. Divided by 992, close the parentheses, raise that to the, let me explain what I did here. Put this in parentheses up here. What I did was 1 over 30 over 365.25. In other words, this is 1 over the number of years. You remember that? I got to revitalize all that stuff that I did before. Remember that it's always to annualize. You take the end over the beginning and then raise that to the 1 over the number of years. and then you minus 1. We'll do a few more of these. But, so technically, that this is a mess, but it's 1 over... open parenthesis, 30 days divided by 365.25. And I do appreciate that this gets woefully confusing, minus 1. So there's my actual interest rate right there, 10.27%. This gets painfully confusing, and you can also easily make a mistake when you're keying this in on a calculator. The one thing you should know, though, is that if you screw up, and believe me, I do it all the time, it's pretty obvious that you've made a mistake. I mean, you'll get a number that's completely ridiculous. So that's the only that's a good thing about a lot of finance calculations. If you've made a mistake, it just goes crazy, especially because you're using exponents. A mistake is going to just make a big mess. So in this case, I got an interest rate that looks kind of normal. So yeah, I got it. So it's, in other words, it's the end value over the beginning value raised to the 1 over the number of years. And in this case, the number of years is 30 days divided by 365.25. But notice how many levels of parentheses you have to put in that when you're keying it in on the calculator. Again, I caution you, be careful. Do not round and then put in like 4 decimal places in an exponent. You'll get an answer that's off. And unfortunately, the sensitivity of those homework problems is such that you can make a mistake, you get do it right, but you just rounded something and you get it wrong. Okay, now, get this off the board. You're going to have to write this down. I'll do some more of these problems. I'll do some more of these problems next week. And that's why I'm going to extend your homework deadline until Wednesday of next week on this, so you have a chance to work on these after you've seen some more of my examples. But I'll do some today. And like I said, probably the best way to do this is just show you some problems. This eraser sucks. Okay, look. Bonds, corporate and government bonds, pay a coupon or their discount. So we're going to go to the coupon versions. A coupon bond does not pay on the principal during the life of the bond. It does not pay on the principal. It just services the debt. It does not amortize the debt. It services the debt. So if the coupon is 7%, that coupon is 7% of the face value. The face value is always $1,000 unless I say differently. That's always FV. So in other words, if you borrow $1 million, technically, in a finance sort of thinking way, you have issued you've issued 100 bonds, each one of them with a face value of $1,000. I mean, that makes it easy for us to think about it. That face value, FV, is par, 1,000. You're going to hear me say price in dollars, but if I quote, it's a tenth of the price. So if I say par, you might hear me say 100. That just means that I'm quoting to par. There are two interest rates in a bond. There is the interest rate that the company or the government pays, and then there is the interest rate that the market wants the bond to pay. You, sir, used to be an incredible company. You offered great clothes, wonderful appliances. Hell, you offered jewelry. You offered everything. You had a catalog that had been around for over 100 years. You were a wonderful company. Generation after generation went to your stores. So when you issued paper at, let's say, 4.5%, bonds, 30-year bonds, the market would have already determined with your investment bankers, that's appropriate. And so 4.5% would have been what you would have paid for that borrowed money for 30 years, and 4.5% would have been what the market wanted you to pay. But then you essentially went to hell. You stopped updating your stores. Your stores were grungy and dingy, and your appliances started getting made in countries that were hard to pronounce. And the jewelry was not really very attractive. And the fashions, I mean, yeah, those would have been fashions your grandma would have worn. And in fact, on the shelves, you smell them, they even smell like grandma. And grandma doesn't wash that much. And so, you know, being given her age. And so it's a nasty store now. So you're still paying 4.5% on those bonds that were issued years ago, but the market says you suck. You're a lot riskier now. You might even go bankrupt. So the market's going to want that interest rate to be higher. It can't be higher, so the market is not going to like you anymore. So your bonds that used to sell at par are now going to sell above par or below par?
Below.
They are going to sell at a discount to par because what the market wants the yield to be is more than what the coupon is. So when the yield is above the coupon, the bond will sell at a discount to par. When the yield is below, well, let's do one. SHLD. SHLD 4.0% due 2023 are right now yielding to maturity 8.32%. What is the current price of this bond? This bond has a term of 5 years. That's how long it has left. Probably this bond was issued in 1993. If it's a 30-year bond, it was issued years ago. It's still got 5 years of its life remaining on it. When it was issued, the investment bankers and the lenders agreed on 4%. Based on the risk of Sears. As time has gone on, though, Sears has fallen into disfavor. The risk of the security now is such that the market wants 8.32% for this bond. Now, write it down what I do here. For God's sake, it's actually not hard, but you've got to follow with me and write along the notes. And we'll do some of this when you have your computers with you or your calculators on Tuesday. Watch. Really? The calculator turned off again. Okay, watch what I'm doing here. Apps. Finance. TVM Solver. Now, the first round I'm going to do with you assumes that the coupons are paid annually. In reality, they're paid semi-annually. But that's an easy adjustment. So for the beginning, what is, madam, what is N? What's the number of years remaining on the dead instrument? How much is left? How much time is left on this bond? 5 years. That's all. Don't worry. It's the numbers are actually easy. Just key them in. The next one that is absolutely crucial that you recognize, the I percent is YTM, the yield to maturity. It is what the market wants. Do not get that confused with the coupon. The coupon is in PMT. The I percent is always YMT. YTM. I said YMT. Okay, now go down to I percent. And in this case, the yield to maturity the market wants is 8.32%. Now just clock this down. The next thing is the price value. That's what we want. We're asking for the price. So you leave that one alone, you go down to PMT. PMT is always the coupon times the face value. So in this case, it's just, what was it, 0.04 times $1,000. How do I know 1,000? Because it's always 1,000. Always 1,000. You just take the coupon times the percent, times the face value. That's all. Always PMT is that number. Now, FV is the future value, the face value, what you're paid at the end. As a lender to Sears, you bought this at in the initial offering in 1993. Every year, you're going to get a check for $40 in the mail. And in the last year, 2023, you will get one last $40 check, and you will get your loan back, $1,000. It's the balloon payment at the end. That's how this is different from consumer debt. In consumer debt, every payment has interest and you're paying off your principal. In corporate and government debt, that isn't how it works. You just service the debt, pay the interest, and then at the end you pay one last interest payment, and then you get whacked $1,000 for every one of them you issue. Now, one thing, always make sure they're down at the very bottom, see that PMT colon, the toggle should always be on end. I mean, I can't think of when you would want that for a bond. You would want it anywhere but at the beginning. Now, bring your cursor back up to PV, the price value. Sears pays 4%. The market says you should be paying us 8.32%. We are not happy with you. So will this, and as you said, is this bond going to sell at a premium or a discount to par? Well, this thing is going to sell at a pretty serious discount to par. So you go alpha enter, which is alpha solve. Well, there it is. $828.96 is the price of this bond. $828.96. This bond is selling at a substantial discount to par. The quote, by the way, is 82.90 on the bond. So if you saw a quote, you'd see 82.90 on it. In other words, the quote is always a tenth of the price. Actually, there's nothing hard about this at all. Do another one. VCT 5.75% 2030 with a yield to maturity of 5.54%. Same thing. It's just like the same thing over and over again. Once you get the hang of it, bonds are really easy. In this case, we've got the term, what is that, 12 years? So N is 12. The yield to maturity is 5.54. Skip over the price value. The payment, in this case, is 0.0575 times 1,000. Face value is always 1,000. Now you go back up to the price value. Now notice that this one, the coupon is paying more than the market currently says it should. So this one should sell at a premium to par because this bond is being generous. So in this case, we would go alpha, solve. Yep. It's selling right now at 1,018.06. That's a premium to par. Quoting it would be 101.81. If someone said, what's the quote, you'd say 101.81. Always be careful when you're buying bonds that you're actually, the quote is only a tenth. I mentioned to you quite a while back, an old friend of mine, he thought he was a genius at investing. He bought 10 bonds, and the bonds were selling at 98-something, the quote was, and he almost had a heart attack when the bill came for close to $10,000. These were $98 bonds. I bought 10 of them. That should have been $900. No, you dumb fool. That was the quote. That wasn't the price. Why the hell would they do it that way? Because they've been doing it that way for 300 years. But anyway, so you see, and that gives you a good idea. Now, here's the other side of it. Let me do one thing here. Like I said, the real way it's done is with semi-annual coupons. All you do in this case, now you got to be a little careful with this. In that case, the semi-annual, more realistically, the semi-annual would mean that there were 12 years times two coupons per year. So there'd be 24 payments. The percentage that you would key in would be a six-month percentage. 5.54 divided by 2. And your coupons would be, each one of them would be half of a year's coupon. So it'd be 0.0575 times 1,000 divided by 2. So N times 2. I percent divided by 2, PMT divided by 2. This is the real way. Now, notice that the price will be not too much different, a little bit different. Go back up to PV, alpha solve. As you can see, it's not significantly different. The price in this more realistic one would be $1,018.23. Not much of a difference in the price on annual versus semi-annual payments. Now let me turn it around and do the real McCoy, the real deal. This isn't what we see. What I've shown you here, that's not what happens. What we actually see is the market pricing. We don't see the market announcing a yield. The market implies the yield by the price. So, watch me not be able to find a stupid bond right now. Usually I can find some of the New York Times corporate bond prices. New York Times usually has some. Here we go. These are, they're investment grade, but they're low investment grade. For example, find one. Oh, Toyota, really? General Electric. Well, there's an interesting thing. Let me find something. GE capital, capital, okay? Now, the coupon on this GE, see this one down here, this GE Capital International Funding Company, medium term. That's a coupon of 4.42%. And that thing still has, help me out here, when's 2035? Yeah, 17 years. I could have done that myself. Okay, that one is GE 437 3445. It's a 4.42% due in 2035. Now, what's going to happen is that you're going to see the quote. That's what the market is doing, buying and selling, pushing the price up and down, just like stocks. That implies the yield. That implies the yield. The price going up and down moves the yield. So they're doing it for us here, but let's see if we can do it ourselves here. $906.91. Okay, let's see if what we can do here. Now, it might be a little off, but kind of hoping it'll be nearly dead on. Okay, so now, 17 years left, right? 17? Well, let's times that by 2 because there'll be semi-annual coupon payments. It's a real bond. Now, in this case, what we're going to do is calculate the yield to maturity. But what we'll get is only half of it because we're using half years. So we'll have to times it by 2 at the end. Now, the price value they're giving us is negative 906.91. Negative 906.91. Now, the coupons are 4.42 times 1,000. Divided by 2. Face value is 1,000. So let me go back up here to the yield to maturity, the I percent. Now again, this is going to be a 6-month yield to maturity because they were 6 months of coupon, 6 months of periods. So what you get if you're calculating yield to maturity, put this down. If you are calculating yield to maturity, times it by 2 for semi-annual payments. If you are calculating yield to maturity, times it by 2. Multiply it by 2 if you're using semi-annual coupons. So what we're going to do is we're going to say alpha solve. Now, see that? 2.627411, whatever. Just scoot the cursor clear over to the end and just say times 2. And then just put your 5.25. Did I get it? Well, spank me Buddha, I got it. Look at that. I've done these and they actually were off. You know why they were off? Is because I was working like in October, but the 2035 might have been in April or May, which would distort what the yield was in that little gap there. So I'd be off a little bit. But this one, see how it's due in November? So in other words, I'm almost dead on to 17 years on the spot. So I'm going to hit it really closely doing it this way. Now, if you're crazy, you can actually do the years and the months and all that kind of stuff. If you want to take a course, by the way, I'm teaching investments 242 next semester. If you want to take that from me, I'm sure you all do. And if you really want to walk on the wild side, I'm teaching derivatives, futures, options, and swaps, which is essentially, I don't know, you can take the course if you have to, or you can, you know, decide that you want to become some kind of other major, you know, like history major, so you don't have to do that. But anyway, okay, so there you go. Now, always remember, though, if you are doing semi-annual, if you're calculating the yield to maturity, which is the realistic thing that you would be doing, like here, see that 5.25%? That's basically a computer's version of what I just did there. The market's going to push the prices up and down and up and down like that. Let me show you something. Let me do another one of these just to see if I'm on a roll here, by heaven. So let me see what. Oh, a couple of real important points. As you get closer to maturity, now you see how the market says. With this GE bond, the yield to maturity came out to be, 5.25%? Okay, you see that this spread right here causes the price to deviate from par. The spread between coupon and a yield to maturity drives the difference between par and the price. In this case, there's a spread. What is that? 83 basis points, something like that, between what the market says the company should pay and what the company pays. And that's what's causing that price to be at a discount to par. The bigger that spread is, the more the price will be away from par. Again, let me say that again. This is a classic quiz question. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Wink, wink. Okay, this is a classic question. The greater the difference between yield and coupon, the further the bond will deviate from par. YTM greater than coupon, the bond price will be at a discount. YTM less than coupon, the bond will sell at a premium. If the yield and the coupon are the same, the bond will sell at par. You can memorize this, but the more you do it, the more it begins to be not something you memorize. It's just kind of obvious. It might not be obvious right now. Obvious is not a word I would use for it right now in your vocabulary. But the more you do these calculations, the more, I see, the market wants more than the coupon, so the market's going to punish the bond. It's going to drive the price down. Oh, this bond pays more than it needs to. The market's going to buy. People are going to love this. They're going to buy it, push the price up. Now, another interesting part of this. However, as a bond approaches maturity, in other words, as the term approaches zero, a bond's price will move toward par. Because you see that spread right there? Look, see this? This is actually a healthy spread on that GE bond. That GE bond's got a spread of 83 basis points. That's pretty big. Well, not huge, but it's pretty big. So see how hard it's being beaten down? See that discount? This thing is selling at a discount of almost $100. As the bond gets closer to its maturity, that difference really doesn't make as much matter as much. Even if this bond stayed the same it was and we were in 2034, this would be very close to $1,000. It would still be below $1,000, but it would be getting closer and closer to $1,000. Because this difference in what the market says it should pay and what this bond is paying is actually significant, because there's a lot of years in which that bad thing is going to happen. Right now, there's still 17 years of this difference remaining. That's why the market's going to spank this bond so hard. But if there's only 1 year left, if we're in 2034, the market's really going, yeah, that's a pretty big difference, but there's only a year left. So this bond is going to be moving toward par. All bonds, unless they're the company's in default or something, all bonds move toward par as term approaches zero. All bonds move toward par. Now, some if the bond, like a Sears bond, Sears bonds are not moving toward par. They're moving toward whatever the bondholders are going to get left when Sears goes bankrupt. Now that Sears is bankrupt. Well, look at this one. Wow. Oh, that's interesting. Look right here. Look at this Toyota bond. You can see it right here. You see this Toyota bond? It's paying a coupon of 1.70%. The market says, no, you should be paying 2.49%. But do you see how little it matters? Because the bond is due next year. This bond's due in just a couple of months. So the bond is nearly at par, even though the coupon really sucks compared to what the market says it should be. You see how the market says you should be paying nearly 2.5%. You're paying 1.70%. My God, that's a huge difference. But there's only a few months left, so the bond is going toward par, because in January, that bond pays everyone $1,000 who's got the bond. Pretty much that's the end of the bond, right there. So at this point, I mean, it's just basically you're going to get $1,000 in 3 months, so that price is just discounting $1,000 3 months. Yeah, I know. I feel a little bored here. Look at this one. How? I'm trying to see. Oh, look at this guy right here. Oh, here's another one. You see this bond? This is a CVS bond. Its coupon is 2.8%. The market says it should be 3.39%. But because the bond is due in only about a year and a half, do you see how close it is to par? But if you look at, let me find a bond that's out there a ways. Well, here's one. Petróleos Mexicanos is right now, the coupon is actually 25 basis points above what the market says it should be. Okay? And because this bond still has about 9 years left on it, 8.5 years, do you see how the premium on it is fairly good, $1,016.12? So there's more time left on this bond, so there's more distance between the par and that. Okay, enough of this. I think I've done this enough for now. Let me try something else. Bonds. What kind of bonds are there? There are normal bonds. Now, there are two types of flavors of normal bonds. There are bonds that are debentures. There is no backing. And then there are bonds that are collateralized, or mortgage bonds. They are backed by an asset. So if the company defaults, the asset is liquidated and it goes to the lender. Obviously, if a company issues both of these at the same time, debentures and mortgage bonds, the mortgage bonds will carry a lower coupon because they are not as risky. Because if you default on me, I can seize your assets. Not that I want to. That's weird with you, sir. But I can seize them, okay? Liquidate them. That money is mine. But if she has lent you money and you have backed it with nothing, then essentially only after I've liquidated my stuff and got my money and some others have liquidated and everything is liquidated, then you get paid. So higher risk and so a higher coupon. That's one way you can break them up. Another way you can break them up is callables. A callable bond gives the lender, or I'm sorry, the borrower, the right to pay off the bond early. So in other words, if I'm paying, you have lent me $10 million at 5% coupon. If interest rates go down to 4%, I can call the bond and pay you off early. I can borrow the money from someone else at 4% and give you your money. You don't like that because you were expecting to get 5% for all those years. I pay you back your money. So callable bonds are going to be somewhat riskier, so they're going to be sell at a lower price, a higher coupon. There are all kinds of weird twists on callables. But I mean, usually, interestingly enough, a callable, you will see a callable. I will borrow on money. Sir, I'm going to borrow $50 million. Due in 2032. Let's do 2038. So these are 20-year bonds, and I'm going to, and they are callable beginning in 2025. So anytime after 2025, I can pay you off. You were expecting to get your coupon for all those years, but if interest rates go down, I can refi and pay you back. So if you ever see a bond where they say, what's the yield to call? Just find the first date at which it can call and use that for N. So in other words, these were 2038 bonds. So instead of N, using the N for the yield to maturity, you'd use the N of 20 times 2, you would use in a yield to call, to find the yield to call, that's 7 years times 2, you use 14 for N. Then there's these nasty little bastards, the convertibles. A convertible bond, I can turn, if I borrow money from you, madam. Let's say I borrow $10 million. I can, at some point in the future, stated in the covenants of the bond, I can turn that into stock. Like if I'm in real trouble financially and I can't pay you and you're about to take me to bankruptcy court and shut my company down, I can turn you into an owner. I can just, our stock is worth 25 cents a share now. We're really in trouble, so I owe you all this money. Well, I can convert that into that equivalent in stock, what I owe you, and give that to you. Now, what can you do to me if I've turned that into stock? Can you still take me to court? No, you're an owner. You'd be taking yourself to court. So clearly, a convertible bond is a risky bond. To the extent that I am lending money and I could have the rug pulled out from under me and become an owner. I lent money for this nice shiny building. You, the borrower, let it go to hell. And now you can't even pay me. And instead of me being able to take you to court, you turn me into an owner. So I'm a part owner of that ugly building. It was so ugly, this mob tore the five-letter name of it off and carried the letters home as souvenirs, like they did in Panama City. As I understand it, the T is actually, the value of it is insanely high right now. There are all kinds of weird bonds out there. And the book goes through, and please read that, but I will tell you about a couple of different types. You see, I borrowed from you, madam, $10 million at 5%. So all I have to do is pay you $500,000 a year. 5%. Yeah. And then in 30 years, I have to pay you that $10 million back. Well, the problem is, of course, that you might not have that $10 million. What I do is in the bond covenants, the agreement, the contract, the indenture agreement, I require that you put money aside in a regular fashion so that you have the $10 million at the end to pay me my principal back. That's called a sinking fund for the bond. Now, another thing that can happen is you can see serial bonds where, let's say I borrow $10 million. I need $10 million on a 5-year. And I say, well, I'd really like to not have to pay $10 million back all at once and then use a sinking fund. Let's work it this way. I'm going to issue bonds for $2 million every year for 5 years. And then as the bonds mature, I'm paying only $2 million back a year for 5 years. That's called a serial bond. So that essentially, it's sort of like a sinking fund built into the bond itself. Now, you can actually, there are some ways that you can actually turn normal bonds into like serial bonds. But there's another one. Serial bonds. Oh, asset bonds or currency bonds. Or foreign bonds. Now let's try one like a foreign bond. A country can borrow money and pay back in another currency. So in other words, if a country, its currency is a little on the shaky side or there's not as much confidence, it could actually agree to pay back the money in another country's currency. So for example, Panama issued a huge amount of bonds, but they are paid back in American dollars. And the money was actually lent in American dollars. Interestingly enough, what was it? Was it Panama? $1.2 billion in paper. I think it was 15-year paper. I'm not sure about that, though. But it was denominated in American dollars. And the Chinese were the primary lenders. And what currency did they lend the money in? American dollars. So that was an interesting thing because though that foreign reserve of American dollars that China has, normally the only place they could use that is to lend money to our government and people. But with countries that denominate their debt in American currency, China has another place that it can use that American money instead of here in the United States. So that was an interesting, and by the way, the Saudi Arabians participated in that debt issue. And of course, the Russians were in there somewhere slithering around, putting money in on the side. So you got a way that countries can get money at a better coupon rate. In other words, there's more confidence by offering in that in a foreign currency. Those are foreign bonds. Another trick, another twist, is to offer an asset, another kind of asset. So, for example, the United States government, after World War II, wanted to borrow a huge amount of money to rebuild Europe. We bombed the hell out of it. The Nazis had bombed it. The Russians had bombed it. Everyone was bombing it. And everyone in Europe, okay. And so we had to rebuild it. It was called the Marshall Plan. So what the United States did was it borrowed insane amount of money to essentially rebuild the rubble back into what we now see as Europe, the beautiful place that it is. We backed, those bonds were called gold bonds because they paid in gold. They paid in literal gold. If you don't like America's currency, well, don't worry. We're paying you back in gold. It created incredible confidence in these bonds. There was only one problem. We issued so many of them, and you know who lent us the money to rebuild Europe? You know who lent us the money to rebuild Europe? in other words, who we pay the gold to. It was rich families in Europe. We nearly wiped out our gold reserves paying these sons of bitches back off. Literally, we were shoveling the gold out of Fort Knox and other places to pay off the gold bonds that we had issued, and the gold went to those people in Europe that we were helping. Yeah. Obviously, that didn't work out quite the way we had planned. But anyway, read the chapter, and like I said, I'm going to extend the deadline until Wednesday night on the homework. That's all I have for you. I thank you.